you believe. Assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. What do you believe? Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener, because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
And taking a bow, thank you very much, everyone. Thanks for tuning in today on 2A Radio. I'm your host, Bill Carnes. So the summer travel season is upon us. Families are going to be loading up in their cars, taking trips. Business professionals are going to be deciding to take a little bit of a drive rather than take a flight if they have an extra day or so. And people are generally hitting the road. In this day and age of personal protection, people want to take their guns with them. They want to have some personal security at their own hand, especially when on a road trip and going to unfamiliar places. So the question becomes, what are the laws? How can I carry this gun with me? Well, as it stands, in D.C. versus Heller, Supreme Court Justice Scalia, who wrote the opinion on that case, said, you can carry your guns with you. It's all good. However, with the Seventh Circuit saying that the Second Amendment and the Heller decision do not apply to the states, and the Ninth Circuit saying they do apply to the states, until the Supreme Court hears these cases and makes another ruling, essentially it's back in the hands of the states. So how do we find out where you can carry? Well, the answer to that is you can go to handgunlaw.us. Handgunlaw.us, www.handgunlaw.us. That's the place to go to with all of the updated information. Now, keep in mind, handgunlaw.us is an organization that they put up the information and they tell you, look, realize this is for general information. It's incumbent upon you to actually check with the states because we are not a legal authority, blah, 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 blah. So, of course, they have their disclaimer on there. It's good information. If you actually call the states, oftentimes you'd call the state police. The state police will quite commonly give you what they want you to do, not what the law actually is. For instance, once upon a time, going through California, one of the options was to have the gun unloaded and in plain view. I happened to have a Glock Model 22 on me. I had it unloaded, slide locked to the rear, sitting on the dashboard as I'm driving back to Nevada. And I had the magazine in the door compartment to my left as I was driving. And I got pulled over for going a little too fast. Part of the reason I was going fast was I had a CHP officer, unbeknownst to me, CHP, right on my back bumper. And I was trying to go fast enough to get in front of a couple cars to get to the other lane so this jackass behind me could go past. As it turns out, he pulls me over with another guy. And when he comes up and he sees the unloaded, clearly unloaded gun on the dashboard, he pulls his gun and points it at my chest. Wasn't even within immediate reaching distance. So not necessarily a good law. But I was following the law. I end up having some goofball, Smokey, pointing his gun at me because he's afraid of an unloaded gun in clear view. So you can go to handgunlaw.us to find out what the laws in the states that you'd be traveling through are concerning travel, carry, whether it's concealed and they have reciprocity with a permit you may have, open carry, and what they regulate you to doing in a vehicle. So check it out. This is Bill Carnes on 2A Radio. Stick around through the break.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Welcome back from the break. I have a little story to read to you. Growing up without guns. Now, this is something that the anti-gunners are going to love to hear the first half of, and the pro-gunners are going to love to hear the second half of. So here we go. Growing up without guns. While growing up, I knew there were guns and other arms because the army and police had them. Us ordinary people didn't need them. The saying was, "My police protect me." I don't think I ever saw a gun except in movies or those carried by police on the streets. Some people in remote mountain villages had small rifles and a limited amount of ammunition, mainly to shoot predator animals to protect their farm animals. At 13, police were going door to door at night, pointing guns at my family and other neighbors. Later, I witnessed how government ordered army and tanks were sent to the streets of my city under the cover of night, killing dozens of innocent people. Not a very good experience to base your opinion about guns. When I came to America, I was prepared to see the abundance and wealth, and I knew I would need to learn lots of things. As an immigrant, I looked into various laws, those that are applied to immigration, employment, and travel. I never looked into the laws about guns. There was not a single drawer in my brain dedicated to firearms. The only knowledge I had was guns are bad. In 2002, there was a sniper on the streets of Virginia, but I never thought about how I could protect myself. I was simply glad the sniper was not frequenting my area, and I stayed home. In all of my searches for good shopping stores, I never even considered that gun stores exist. No one tells you that at the border control at the airport, and unless I came across someone who took the time to talk and explain the facts to me, I still would never have thought any different. I give full credit for my re-education to my husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, who was the first person I would ever hear to frequently use the words, "The Constitution actually says, da-da-da. The local rules do not require you to, da-da-da. Have you read Common Sense?" There were very different conversations from the ones I had had with at work or with my girlfriends. So my message to you is this. If you let any society grow accustomed to seeing guns as only for use by police or criminals, if you let just two generations go on like that, you will eventually have a society which I grew up. It's a strange feeling when, while carrying open in Virginia, I have to tell people, no, I'm not a law enforcement officer, and I do not intend to impersonate one. I am just exercising my right. You have one too, you know? Sometimes this makes me want to double check if I am in America. If you have lived in this country for 8 years, I am one paragraph off. If you haven't figured it out yet, I was born in the Soviet Union. It was the largest prison in the world, where the prisoners were either unaware they were in prison or they were deeply aware of it and therefore were eliminated by the government. I have lived in this country for 8 years, and I am just coming to a point where I can't imagine not having a Second Amendment as the norm. It takes time to turn your whole knowledge and vision of life upside down to pretty much throw away the morals you grew up on. I just finished reading 1984 by George Orwell. We would never be allowed to read this book in the Soviet Union. But when I was done reading it, I knew that for 20 years, I had lived the life of the next generation after Winston Smith, the generation that did not know that a human is capable to think and reason. And the Soviet government did not have to torture me to get me to that stage. I was already born in a thought vacuum that my ancestors allowed to be established. It was pointed out that Soviet schools had very strong curriculum, especially in math and history. But we never heard Patrick Henry's "Give me liberty or give me death" speech. History books never mentioned Jefferson's proposed language for the Virginia Constitution: "No free man shall ever be debarred the use of arms." We were slaves, no doubt. Worse yet, We were dead in a sense that we could not live out our lives how we wanted. Most people, at least once in their life, said or heard someone say, "I wish I could bring my childhood back." I might have said it too. Not now, not anymore. The Second Amendment to me, then, is the one guarantee that my past will never become my future. That is by Layla Myers. Layla Myers was born in the Azerbaijan Republic of the former Soviet Union. She came to the States in May of 2001 on an employment visa, and she currently lives with her husband in Virginia. And this is her story. Why is this story important? Well, this story is important because we are headed down this same path. Later in the show, I'm going to be reading to you an online essay that was published by a fellow who used to be within the Reagan administration, a higher up at the CIA, and his definition of revolution and really what's happening in this country. You're really going to want to hear this. This lady, in her Soviet childhood, faced what our children and grandchildren will be facing. Two generations. Because you learn from your parents. And when you learn from your grandparents, oftentimes it's fairly far removed, your time with them. And you look at them as somewhat of a novelty, as opposed to an authority. So if we allow the people of today and their children to grow up under the idea that guns are evil objects and only the government, the soldiers, and the police need them, then they're going to grow up raising their children the same way, because that's all they're going to know, and it will be done with. Fighting for the rights for your Second Amendment freedoms, using your guns, using them to go hunting, using them for sporting uses, using them for practice, using them to go out and learn the defensive nature of them and how to use them defensively, is about as all-American as you can possibly get. You get hot dogs, you get apple pie, you get baseball, you get your Second Amendment rights. All of these should not be pastimes. They should all be current times, especially with the potential to have our gun rights eroded so heavily by the regime which has taken over the White House and is beginning to control both houses of Congress up on Capitol Hill. The Obama regime, as I will now refer to it, has gone so far as to take over the auto industry, in the process of beginning to take over the insurance industry, taken over the banking industry, taken over financial markets within Wall Street, and is now trying to take over the entire healthcare industry. All of these processes, for the most part, were started by the Bush administration. They have been taken full tilt by the Obama regime. We have come further in the last 6 months towards full socialism than in any other time in our history. And without the actual hostile takeover of a country, this is the fastest any nation has ever gone towards the guise of pure socialism. At no other time in modern history have we seen socialism take such a dramatic effect on a country without an actual regime change in the form of a revolution, such as the hostile takeover of a government. This was an elected takeover of the government, taken over, elected by the stupid people, the ignorant and stupid majority of America, that believed every word that was coming out of Obama's illegitimate mouth about change coming to America. Change has come to America. The exact type of change that conservatives feared. I'm not going to use the word Republicans, because the Republicans are in on this just as much as the Democrats are. And because they turn a blind eye, are even potentially more guilty. I say conservatives for the mindset of the people who know what's right and know what America was founded on, and that those principles should be continued for generation after generation, and being unwavered. We have got socialism in America. The Obama administration now wants to regulate the salaries of CEOs of companies which are not currently, that have yet to be taken over by the government. The auto industry, the banking industry, now we're looking at the insurance industry as well as the healthcare industry, are all either directly under the control of the government or soon to be if we don't act further. And now the Obama administration wants to limit the salaries of CEOs in industries other than the ones I just named. How can they do this? Well, they can't do it legally. However, the process for a law which was passed illegally on Capitol Hill and signed into law by the president is very long and very difficult to have that law ruled unconstitutional and illegal. And it's rather expensive. And who's it up to? It's up to us, we the people, to take away from our time and our finances that we don't already have to pay into the government coffer to fight these illegal and unconstitutional laws. And that, my friends, is a form of tyranny. More to come when we return from the break. Stay tuned to the Republic Broadcasting Network. This is Bill Carnes on 2A Radio.
Responsible people have no business owning a gun or listening to this show. 2A Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
And let me sit down and ask you if you're opposed to any one of the following. Are you opposed to illegal immigration? Are you opposed to same-sex marriage? Are you opposed to free trade agreements? Are you opposed to gun control? Are you opposed to the New World Order? Or are you opposed to a one-world government? Are you opposed to the outsourcing of American jobs? Are you opposed to the perceived threat to the U.S. sovereignty by foreign powers? How about abortion? How about declarations of martial law? Are you opposed to the creation of citizen detention camps? Are you opposed to the suspension of the U.S. Constitution? How about the abridgment of state authority? Have you branded anybody into the thoughts of end-of-time prophecies? Do you stockpile food? Do you stockpile ammunition? Do you stockpile firearms? If you answered yes to even one of these questions. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me ask this as well. In case you didn't say yes to any of the above. Are you a veteran, a combat veteran, or a veteran of a combat time, whether you pulled a trigger or not, from the U.S. Armed Forces? If you said yes to any one of those, you are considered a right-wing extremist by the Department of Homeland Security, headed by Janet Napolitano, former governor of Arizona. Now, keep in mind that the Department of Homeland Security was formed by the Bush administration to keep the homeland of America safe, essentially from terrorism. Terrorism on American soil from foreign nationalists who would do us harm, either from the outside or from within. What has happened now under the Obama regime is the Department of Homeland Security has turned into a security of government infrastructure from nationalist ideas of citizens within this country. They have their own department. Once the department is formed, the charter can be changed, and the directives, therefore, can also be changed, essentially at the whim of the president. So if President Obama calls up Janet Napolitano and says, I'm sending over a memo, Janet, I need you to look at it, heed the warnings, and get your entire department on it. And this memo essentially says, and this is a private memo, not open up, not opened just yet to the Freedom of Public Information Act because it's national security. You now are under directive to protect the government and government interests from any powers from within, essentially from any extremist Americans who are against the government buildup. Therefore, the right-wing extremism memo comes out. If you are part of any of these things that I read at the beginning of this segment, here's what I'd like you to do. I'd like you to get on a website, which was spawned from this radio show, and one of your fellow listeners is managing it. It's called imonjanetslist.com. Put your name on there and your hometown, and there's plenty of room for all sorts of comments on this. imonjanetslist.com. Because it would be sorry for them to actually label someone else other than you as a true American. If you disagree in any of these things, you are more and more a true American. If you have actually served in the U.S. military, you are even more so a true American. If you are opposed to the suspension of the Constitution, the abridgment of state authority, the creation of citizen detention camps, declarations of martial law, if you're opposed to any of those, you are more and more a true sovereign American. And let's let these pinhead, scumbag, regime toads in Washington know that there are tens of millions of us out there, and we are the last group that they're going to want to mess with. They've already started, and it's going to get to the point where we're going to say, we've had about a damned enough, and you're not going to go any further. If you do, your butts are going to be out on the street. And everybody else on the street, when your butts get there, are going to be ready to cane your sorry butts for what you've done to this country. So go on to imonjanetslist.com, sign up, and proudly let them know, I'm not going to stand for this. I'm on the list, and I put myself there. I have the intestinal fortitude to log on there and put myself on there and let you know that I am not going to tolerate any more of the shenanigans. Not in my day, not in my backyard, not in my hometown, not against my state, certainly not in my country. I encourage you to go on there today and sign up. I encourage you to spread the word and get others to sign up. The more like-minded people we have on there, the more people that sign up and say, I've had enough, and I'm not going to take any more, the more that we're going to be able to stand up and say, these are the Americans you face if you continue down this path. Stay tuned after the break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Rule one, assume it's loaded. Rule two, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule three, listen to the 2A radio show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443. Radio with Bill Carnes, 1-800-313-9443.
Imagine today's riot just happens to be that. coming from what's going on within the federal government. The idea of what's happening with the socialist recreation of the United States right under our noses, essentially since the introduction and the takeover of the Obama regime, has become absolutely unfathomable. And they're doing nothing but working harder on this head of steam in which they've created. Keep in mind a law of physics. A body in motion tends to stay in motion unless acted upon by another force. A body at rest tends to stay at rest unless acted upon by another force. So this body at rest of the U.S. government was acted upon by the Obama regime, catapulted forward by the Obama regime. The movement, however, was started many years ago with other administrations. Now, with the head of steam, there's now gravity on its side, momentum behind it, and the Obama regime is really starting to screw up this country. Something fierce. The idea that the second American Revolution may happen is, in fact, already going on. And we, the conservatives, don't even realize it. We are the victims of this revolution. The socialists, the Democrats, the left-wingers started this years ago, and they are full steam, full power ahead. I'd like you to listen to the following online essay that I'm about to read for you now. Pay very close attention. Revolution by Herbert E. Meyer. During the last 30 years, we Americans have been so politically divided that some of us have called this left-right liberal-conservative split a culture war or even a second civil war. These descriptives are no longer accurate. The precise technical word for what is happening in the United States today is revolution. Because of our country's history, we tend to think of revolutions as military conflicts and of the revolutionaries as the good guys, the image of Minutemen fighting valiantly against the British forces at Lexington and Concord lies deep within our DNA. But sometimes, quite often actually, revolutions aren't military conflicts, and the good guys are the ones trying to keep the revolution from happening. In January 1933, Adolf Hitler was appointed Chancellor of Germany by his elected president. He would spend the next 2 years consolidating his power with the legislative covenants of his political allies in the Reichstag. In October 1917, Lenin and his Bolsheviks took control of Russia from Kerensky and his Social Democrats, who had overthrown the Tsar earlier that year, entirely through parliamentary maneuvering in Russia's fledgling Duma. What defines a revolution, and this is the crucial point to grasp, is that when it's over, a country has changed not merely its leaders and its laws, but its operating system. Since most of us think of computers when we hear the phrase operating system, let me use this analogy to illuminate my point. Every computer has an operating system, and most of us are using either the Microsoft or the Apple operating system. If you want to do something with your computer, send an email, watch a DVD, read an online essay, you must do it the way your computer's operating system is designed to work. No operating system is perfect, which is why Microsoft and Apple send updates to their customers from time to time. And every so often, these companies launch new versions of their operating systems that incorporate a lot of modifications at once. Can you change the operating system you use? Of course you can. 2 years ago, I threw out every Microsoft-based machine in our company's office and replaced them with Apple products. Last month, I met a corporate CEO who had just done the opposite and replaced the Apple computers in his office with ones that run on the Microsoft operating system. Democracies and dictatorships. Now, just as computers have operating systems, so do countries. In fact, countries have dual operating systems, one political and the other economic. Broadly speaking, there are two kinds of each. Politically, you can be a democracy or a dictatorship, and economically, you can have either a free market or a command economy. because countries don't buy their operating systems off the shelves the way that we buy our computer operating systems, each country develops its own version. This is why our country's democracy is somewhat different from Canada's, which in turn is slightly different from Australia's, and so forth. These countries all have free market economies, but again, they aren't quite the same. Still, the similarities among democracies and free market economies are more striking than the differences. Likewise, while no two dictatorships are the same, and no two command economies work exactly the same way, the differences among them are comparatively trivial. Since no country's operating systems are perfect, can they be improved? Of course they can. Every time our Congress passes a new law or enacts a new regulation, or whenever the Supreme Court issues an opinion, that's the equivalent of an update to our political or economic operating system. Can you change a country's operating system? Yes, you can. And the precise technical word for replacing one political or economic operating system with another is revolution. When politics in a democracy is normal, the political parties all agree to preserve the operating system while they compete to improve it. This is what is actually happening when one party in Congress introduces a new piece of health care or education legislation and the other party opposes it or introduces its own health care or educational bill, or when two candidates for the Senate argue over whether or not to change our immigration laws. Honorable people often will disagree about what to do, sometimes quite strongly, just as the software engineers at Microsoft and Apple will sometimes argue through the night about whether a proposed change in the operating system's code is an improvement or just a kludge. But in normal politics, the outer limits of all these disagreements are marked by a shared commitment to preserving and improving the operating system. In abnormal politics, the objective of one party isn't to improve the operating system, but to overthrow it. With this analogy in mind, now we can see clearly what's been happening in the United States during the last three decades. While conservatives have been working to improve our democracy and our free market economy, liberals have been working to replace our democracy with a dictatorship and our free market economy with a command economy controlled by the government. The liberals couldn't say this aloud, because if they did, the American people would have tossed them out of office on their ears. So the liberals worked covertly, feigning support for democracy and for the free market, while working diligently to undermine both. This is why our politics have been so partisan, so vicious, and so deadlocked. This is why words have lost their meaning in Washington, why we can never get to the bottom of anything, why we lurch from one manufactured scandal to another. It's all been part of a decades-long effort by the liberals to throw sand in our eyes to keep us from seeing clearly where they really want to take us. And this explains why, when we question their judgment on some issues, they go berserk and accuse us of questioning their patriotism. They're afraid we're on the verge of catching on. If you want to have some fun the next time you're chatting with the liberal, and he goes nuts when you call him a socialist, say to him, "I'm so sorry you're offended. Please tell me, what is there about socialism you don't like?" You won't get a coherent answer. He'll just accuse you of a hate crime. Obama's two-front offensive. With the election of Barack Obama as president, the liberals have launched a massive two-front offensive they believe will end in victory. They have judged that our political education system is so degraded that only a few Americans are left who even understand what a democracy is and how the free market actually works. They are convinced that the majority of Americans are too frightened by the current recession to care about preserving the principles that made us the most powerful, productive, and innovative country the world has ever known. In short, the liberals are reaching for victory because they believe that history now is on their side. The speed of their offensive is breathtaking. At the core of democracy is the rule of law, and we have already lost it. The liberals lecture us incessantly that everything is relative, but that's not true. Some things are absolutes. You cannot claim to be faithful to your spouse because you never cheat on her, except when you're in London on business. And you cannot claim to have the rule of law if the government can set aside the rule of law when it decides that special circumstances have arisen that warrant illegality. When the president and his aides handed ownership of Chrysler Corporation to the United Auto Workers Union, they tried to avoid sending that beleaguered company into bankruptcy by muscling its bondholders into accepting less money for their assets than the law entitled them to collect. These contracts and the law under which they were signed were mere obstacles to a thuggish president bent on paying off his political supporters. It's going to get much worse fast. President Obama has told us time and again that among his criteria for choosing federal judges will be empathy. Empathy is a wonderful quality in any human being, but a judge's job is to rule according to the law. Once our courts are presided over by judges who will reach verdicts based on how they feel about an issue, such as abortion or the right of citizens to bear arms, the law will be whatever the judge wishes it to be. The rule of law will become an empty phrase rather than the architecture of our civilization. We have lost our free market economy as quickly as we have lost the rule of law. Money is to an economy what blood is to a body. Life and death resides within the organ that controls its flow. The government already owns our country's leading banks, which means the government now controls our economy. And in all fairness to President Obama, it was the Bush administration that started us down this ghastly road. One indicator of the Obama administration's real objective, when some banks that had taken federal money attempt to repay their loans, the Treasury Department refused to accept repayment and step aside. This shows the government's goal isn't to prop up the banks, but rather to control them. Here, too, things are going much worse fast. The government now owns General Motors Corp., is reaching for control of insurance companies, and has launched plans to take over our country's healthcare industry. It even wants authority to set the salaries of executives in industries that, at least for now, aren't being subsidized or underwritten by the government. Put all this together, and what we have in our country today isn't a democracy and isn't a free market economy. What we have now is a revolution. This revolution won't be stopped, and our country won't be rescued by the Republicans in Washington. This isn't because they lack the votes. It's because most of them are careerist hacks who've been playing footsie with the Democrats for too long. With very few exceptions, they lack the intellectual firepower to articulate the present danger and the political courage to stand up to this administration and fight it. But for the absence of frock coats and pince-nez glasses, these Republicans in Washington remind me of those bumbling Weimar Republic politicians in Berlin who never grasped where Hitler and the Nazis were going until it was too late to stop them, or for those helpless Mensheviks in Moscow's Duma who let themselves be tossed into history's dustbin by Lenin and his Bolsheviks. Yes, of course, I realize it's explosive to keep bringing up the Nazis and Bolsheviks in an essay about the Democrats. I'm not doing this to be incendiary. I'm doing this to be accurate. The future is in our hands. Our country's future now lies within our hands. Yours, mine, all of us who comprise what the Washington insiders sneeringly call the grassroots. Good. Because unless I'm very much mistaken, the liberals have overestimated their strength. There still are more of us than there are of them. I mean ordinary, decent Americans from across the political spectrum who may disagree about specific issues, but who understand who we are and how we become who we are, who love our country, have a genius for self-organizing, and won't let the United States go down without a fight. We need to launch a counteroffensive, to speak, and the place to start is at the local level. Working with our county and state political parties when we can, or working around them when we must, our objective will be to elect as many people as we can to public office who understand what a democracy is and how the free market works. This will include city council members, county commissioners, school board members, judges, sheriffs, and even members of the local parks commission. With the strength and political momentum, we can surge to the state level and then, before it's too late, take back the power in Washington, D.C. I know this isn't the kind of battle most of us want to fight. We would rather watch the talking heads slug it out on Fox News than stand on a street corner handing out campaign flyers. And given our country's history, for a while it will be uncomfortable to find ourselves fighting against the revolution and for the status quo. But we'll get used to this as we make our case over and over again to our friends, our neighbors, at barbecues and PTA meetings, and at public rallies like those marvelous April Tea Parties that drove the liberals insane. And we'll draw strength as our ranks swell with new recruits. The alternative to launching this kind of peaceful and political counterattack is horrific. Right now, sales of guns and ammunition are rising sharply. This reflects an intuitive grasp by grassroots Americans of what history teaches may lie ahead. It was only after the Nazis had secured their grasp on power in Germany, and only after the Bolsheviks had seized control of Russia, that they had set out to disarm and destroy the vast number of ordinary citizens who, to the astonishment and fury of the revolutionaries, just wouldn't go along. That's when the real shooting started and when blood began flowing in the streets. The author of this essay, Herbert E. Meyer, served during the Reagan administration as special assistant to the Director of Central Intelligence and vice chairman of the CIA's National Intelligence Council. He holds the U.S. National Intelligence Distinguished Service Medal, which is the intelligence community's highest honor. He is author of The Cure for Poverty and How to Analyze Information. I hope you enjoyed that essay. We'll sum it up just a little bit, and George in Texas, hang on the line. We'll get to you as soon as we come back from the break.
Gun control, loved by dictators since 1917. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that online essay by Herb Meyer. It certainly sheds a little bit of light on some of the things going on in this country and how a revolution has already been begun, and it's already taking full effect. And a lot of us haven't even seen it. Right now, we're going to take a caller. George in Texas, you're on line one.
Good morning.
How are you, George?
You know, the thing is about all these socialists in Washington, they're forgetting, they think they're operating in a vacuum and they're not, because we've already seen this happen before. And, you know, and people down in Texas, I tell you, every gun show I've been to, everything's been flying off the shelf. Guns, ammunition, parts, everything. And these people up in Washington do not have a clue that they might be biting off more than they can chew.
I would agree with you, George. I think the first indication that anybody really sent to them were the tea parties in April. And unfortunately, that hasn't been enough to wake them up to really what could be coming with a counter-revolution.
Well, I kind of see it. I kind of see, you know, even like the gun and ammunition sales, they think people are going to turn their guns. I don't think so. But I just say, we've seen this before. We've seen this in Russia. We've seen this in China. We've seen this in Cambodia. We've seen this in all the countries where they disarmed the people. And what's the next thing that happened? You know, there's massacres. And I really thank God that us owning our weapons is the only thing keeping us, Obama and his company from exterminating us.
George, I agree. Thank you very much for the call. Really what it comes down to is the difference between citizens and subjects. If you happen to be a citizen, you're armed. If you happen to be a subject, you're not armed. So those of you who are out there thinking, you know what, I'm glad other people are armed, but it's really not for me. Understand that those of us with arms are into self-preservation and self-protection first. We'll come to your aid if we're able to, but it's really up to yourself to provide your own protection for yourself and your family. If you so choose to not protect yourself and your family, and you choose to not exercise your Second Amendment rights, realize you are standing there as a victim to anyone and everyone who is either physically able to take control of you or your family, or able to through some form of arms, be it a gun, a bat, a golf club, a knife, a flamethrower, a blowtorch, whatever it may be. And if you choose to not protect yourself, you are at the whim of whomever would bring you harm, be that another human being or be that your government, which is really what we're talking about here. The reason that the Second Amendment exists, the reason that this radio program exists, is to solidify for the preservation of the Second Amendment, for armed Americans to exist and not be shut out and disarmed by their government. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you in Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. I'd like to thank everyone for spending their morning with me. Stay tuned to RBN for the rest of the day.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.